Hello everyone and welcome to another oneliner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig, and with me as always, Scott Morris.
Delighted to meet you.
And Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
No inane witty banter from me, let's just crack on. Alright guys, so it's that time of year, award season, where, put not too fine a point on it, quite a lot of good stuff is kicking about in the cinema, and by that I mean awards bait. Because I think we've actually had a pretty good year cinematically anyway, overall. But January and early February always see the sort of cream of the crop rising to the top of the multiplex schedules. So let's kick off with American Hustle. Who wants to lead us in on that?
American Hustle is David O. Russell's latest and features are half the returning cast of his Silver Linings Playbook. Focuses on Irvin Rosenfield, played by Christian Bale. He is a small-time con man whose career starts to pick up immensely when he hooks up with Amy Adams's Sydney Prosser, a small-town girl who decides to fake a British accent and suddenly becomes part of the elite con person pairings as they parlay from a small dry-cleaning business into a large fake art business, which then becomes a bit of a loan sharking business. However, all this criminality, fun as it is, soon comes to the attention of the FBI and particular agent Richie DeMasso, played by Bradley Cooper. He seeks not to bust the two for their manifold small-scale crimes, but to enlist their help in entrapping various members of the political classes, starting with Mayor Carmine Polito, played by Jeremy Renner. From, again, the hooks into Mayor Carmine, he then looks to get even bigger targets all the way up to senators and so on and so forth as the thing goes on. However, balanced against this is the fact that Richie DeMasso seems to be taking his new role as con artist a little bit too seriously, and it's having some deleterious effects on his mental stability. Meanwhile, Irvin's looking at this with barely disguised fear and paranoia and is looking to get out of this as soon as he can, while also balancing his relationship with Amy Adams, with Sydney, with that of his long-suffering wife, Rosalind Rosenfield, played by Jennifer Lawrence. So it goes, and it's essentially a tale of con artists, as you would probably expect from the title, and it works pretty well. There's really nothing too much in there that annoyed me for the most part. It's one of these films that I actually watched and thoroughly enjoyed, but I don't really have a great deal to say about it. There's an awful lot of good performances. It's Christian Bale's amongst his best and also amongst his best hairstyle. Bradley Cooper is sufficiently manic, although he's probably the weakest link in the film. He's still acceptable in the role, but it does seem like he's making a bit much of the role, if you will. And Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence do pretty well in their roles, although you could argue that Jennifer Lawrence's role is a little bit underwritten. And Jeremy Renner's likeable as Mayor Carmen Polito, who seems like the one person who probably shouldn't be targeted in all of this, but nonetheless, he is. There is really not a great deal that I thought this did wrong. I've seen it described on Twitter by friend of mine, hello George, as Goodfellas but without the teeth and kind of defanged a little bit, and I think that's not a bad analogy, perhaps a little bit unfair because an awful lot of the edginess of Goodfellas comes with the fact that it's organised crime and people getting killed and so on and so forth, rather than essentially con tricks and political hustling. So there's a difference in that respect, but you can see the kind of similarities in tone. It works very well. It's very engaging. The story is, I don't know exactly how based in reality is. At least it has the good sense not to claim that it's based on a real story, rather than bits of it are. But it does seem to certainly truck along very nicely. It's got some very compelling performances. And the central tale of how these people are looking to use their confidence, tricks their abilities to bring dodgy political characters to justice is, you know, it's very compelling. And I thoroughly enjoyed the 2 hours or so that it's somewhat over 2 hours, I believe, that this film takes. Yeah, I heartily enjoyed it. It's easily a very strong contender to be going on Film of the Year lists already, and that's only a good thing.
Drew, a recommendation shared?
Yes, perhaps not quite so effusive in my praise of Scott. I mean, it's a very, very good film. I enjoyed it a great deal. I wouldn't say it's best picture material, but yeah, I enjoyed it. The characterizations are fun. Bradley Cooper, as Scott said, is the weak link. Not somebody I hugely rate anyway, but he seems a bit hammy, perhaps, might be the word in this at times.
Yeah.
He's just going a bit too over the top with his performance, but it's more than made up for by excellent performances from everybody else. It's not just Christian Bale's hairstyle that's notable. Jeremy Renner's also sports an impressive thatch.
It might actually literally be Thatch at that point.
Yes. And while he's sporting an awful lot of hair, Amy Adams isn't sporting an awful lot, but fortunately she's given enough material to act with that she's not just there to be eye candy, which is pleasing. Scott mentioned comparisons to Goodfellas. There's been comparisons to other Scorsese films too, notably Casino. The comparisons are expected and they're not without merit. Some of it is aspiration, some of it is simply homage. It's very deliberate in a couple of places. And as much as this would like to be Goodfellas it is not. And while Goodfellas is probably one of the few films that can get away with a narration, American Hustle can't, and it would probably be better off without it. Especially, it at least feels like everybody in the film gets to narrate it at some point. Probably not accurate that, but that's certainly how it feels. It's not without flaws, but there are absolutely nothing to stop it being anything other than a really enjoyable character piece. The only thing that I find slightly strange is I've been informed by a few people and read in a few places that people have been going gaga over a scene in which Jennifer Lawrence makes a terrible job of cleaning her house to music. Something that I actually found quite ridiculous, and it feels like a rejected Shake and Vac advert. so why people like that so much, I have no idea, but it's an excellent character piece. It's probably David O. Russell's second best film I think I've seen. I still think I prefer The Three Kings, which does tend to be overlooked by a lot of people, I feel, unfairly.
It does indeed.
It's very good, and you should see it.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
You might have to pay a bit more nowadays, though, Craig. Inflation since Robocop.
Oh, for goodness sake. Why must I have been frozen in carbonite since 1986? So another knockabout comedy on the roster at the moment is 12 Years a Slave, Drew.
Yeah, I only saw this yesterday. I'm still letting it sink in, I'm afraid.
That's such nonsense. I've never known anyone for this compute nonsense. Drew, did you laugh at it or not?
It's a laugh, right?
Oh, goodness gracious. Do you want to give us a brief overview of it?
This is true for, you know, given values of true as it pertains to movies. The true tale of a free black man in 1840s America called Solomon Northup, who it seems is targeted specifically to be duped, drugged, and sold into slavery, after which he finds it impossible to prove his free status and spends a long time being treated like a piece of meat or worse in some of the most unpleasant passages of human history. What marks him out, though, while many, many millions suffer the same deprivation as he did, he's one of the very few people, free blacks, who were abducted into slavery, who managed to escape, and having been a particularly eloquent and well-read man, he managed to write his memoirs on which this film is based. There's not too much you can say about the story. It's shown you some of the horrible treatment that American slaves received. There's nothing surprising there, but it is just disgusting, despicable, and a pure rage magnet. I spent most of my time just seething with impotent fury during this, because the things that humans do to other humans and then try to justify as well is, it leaves me speechless, you see. The interesting thing about this film isn't so much what it depicts, other than that it depicts it very well and in a very candid manner. It's the excellent performances. Chiwetel Ejiofor as Solomon Northup is fantastic and does a great job of showing the different stages of his life and the things he had to do, the fighting to try and prove who he was and then having to make the sacrifices to his principles in order to survive. There's a compelling and evil turn from Michael Fassbender as a evil and deranged slave owner. Words are failing me now.
Did you laugh?
I told you, it's a laugh, right? Beginning to end.
Deary me.
What do you say about it? It's a film about slavery. None of it's nice. None of it's in any way enjoyable. And it's not meant to be, but it's very much something you should watch. And it's something, actually, that made me think that it's strange that it's been so little covered. For instance, things like the Holocaust has been covered in numerous films, thousands of them probably, whereas the plight of slaves in comparison seems to have been not overlooked, but rather underserved. And it's something that everybody should watch, so people don't forget how bad this was, and that it's not actually all that long ago, despite the idiots commenting on this film saying things along the lines of, oh, it was 150 years ago, it's slavery's over, can we not just all get over it? Despite the fact these people live in a country founded on it, but I have no idea what else to say.
Well, I think you've...
And that's like just... you.
Very succinctly put. Yeah, Scott, did you laugh?
I didn't laugh, really. It is... I know you like to think of this as a roustabout comedy, but it's really not. It's quite... It's actually a little bit grim. Just a tad, a smidgen grim. But on the plus side, it does let you use the word antebellum in a actually accurate situation, so that's good.
Cool. I've been waiting a long time for that.
I think what I found remarkable about the film, the central story is compelling, the performances are great, but I hear people saying that, well, in a nutshell, I knew slavery was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad.
I thought
that's a stupid thing to say. Of course we all know slavery is bad. But after watching the film, I can kind of see where they're coming from. Now, I'm going to have to explain this, and because I know this podcast level, by a convoluted analogy to being kicked in the balls. Now, when you were a youngster, you either were told or you picked up through popular culture that being kicked in the balls was very painful and you should seek to avoid it. And I took that message to heart, and it took a very long time for me to actually be properly kicked in the balls. But one thing that happens is, even though I knew it was going to be painful, you can't really properly enunciate the feeling of being kicked in the balls until you actually are kicked in the balls. Then you understand what it's like. Now, I'm not saying that watching a two-hour film of this grim, horrendous treatment of humanity is in any way the same as being a slave, but it's the closest that any of us are hopefully ever going to get, and it certainly gave me a better understanding of it after watching the film than I had before. It is just so amazingly dehumanising, and while I understood all that on an intellectual level before, this gives you at least some hope of seeing what it's like on the more visceral, everyday, god-awful level of it, and that is a remarkable bit of filmmaking. That is why it's so powerful, and that is why it's lauded so much. It is a tremendous work. It's obviously not enjoyable. It is a grim watch to sit through for 2+ hours, but it's an important film, and it's one of these things that you really need to see, I think. It's as socially important a film as I think we'll see this decade. Terrifically powerful, and obviously amazingly compelling and touching, particularly the scenes towards the end as Northrop is reunited with a family that thought him dead, and it's a very powerful book work with a number of great performances, and even it does manage a few comic moments, particularly Paul Dano getting his comeuppance, but for the most part it is just a rather grim, let's call it a documentary, as close as we're going to see, I think, and a powerful work in it. It's, as Drew says, an area that really should be more explored, I believe, and I can kind of understand why an Asian may want to bury their head and forget that this sort of stuff happened. And it's, you know, it's easy to see, as I suppose, in a way, it's kind of easier to examine the Holocaust because we've got the bad guys what done that one, and everyone kind of could agree that they were bad. But even in this film, and even Solomon Northrop himself, I mean, if you look at the way that Benedict Cumberbatch's character, I think his name was Ford,
yeah,
his master. I mean, apparently in his biography, Northrop has nothing but good things to say about him. He just thinks he's a guy who was caught up in a long time, and it would be lovely to think that if I was born in Southern America right at this time, I would obviously understand that slavery is bad and immoral and evil. But if you had been brought up in a situation where it's entirely normal to think of black people as property, would I? I don't know. You're as much nurture as nature, aren't you? But yeah, so compelling, interesting. Powerful, definitely worth watching.
It's strange that, possibly I'm missing something, but in the last, say, 15 or 16 years, there's been Amistad, Amazing Grace, and Django that have properly touched on slavery.
Yes, the riveting documentary Django.
Yeah, and still we haven't seen any arrests.
It's just wrong that this hasn't been more covered. I didn't have quite the impact on me it had in Scotland, in terms of that I wasn't really in any doubt. I've seen enough documentaries, and for instance, Ken Burns' excellent American Civil War documentary, the way they talk about how black people and slaves in particular were treated, to be in no doubt about quite how bad they had it. But still, seeing these really compelling performances on screen and seeing what's happening to these characters, you get invested in very, very quickly. It does just, it hits you in the gut. And it's one of those films that it's in no way enjoyable, but this is very much one of those worthy but superb rather than worthy but dull films. It's rewarding, but will probably leave you emotionally exhausted.
And laughing. Which leaves us with a rather random catch-up film for the week, which I believe is available on Netflix right now, and it is The Last Stand, Drew.
Yeah, so he's finally finished with his dalliance into politics, which seems to be longer than it actually was, and his appetite for movies whetted by his cameo appearances in The Expendables and its sequel, Arnie is back in his first leading role in a decade. And it really does feel like more than 10 years since Terminator 3. Anyway, here he plays Ray Owens, the sheriff of a sleepy border town, that suddenly finds itself at the heart of the action when the leader of a drugs cartel violently escapes the FBI custody and speeds towards Mexico. While Edward Noriega's Cortez shoots his way out of FBI custody, Arnie potters about Somerton, enjoying the small-town life and having nothing more to concern him than bad parking and callow but enthusiastic deputies. But suspicions over a visitor in town, Peter Stormare's trucker, soon lead to death and destruction, and our hero finds himself preparing for a showdown. While it may not surprise you to hear that this isn't Schwarzenegger's finest movie, it's surprisingly, if forgettably fun. A relatively earnest escaped prisoner story is leavened with scenes of the people and life of a small town, and there are nods to the hero's age, he's nearing 70, don't forget, that raise a smile but fortunately aren't overplayed and aren't laboured. As the escapee nears the town though, and the climactic last stand approaches, the tone of the film changes and becomes both darker and sillier, which provides for a rather uncomfortable mix. The effect of the peace of this small town being so rudely shattered is rather undermined by ill-chosen physical gags and Stormare's hammy villain going full pantomime, as well as a few ludicrously over-the-top deaths, but none of it's so objectionable as to stop The Last Stand being a passable bit of entertainment. It's good to see Schwarzenegger back where he belongs, and there's enjoyable support from Stormare, Johnny Knoxville and Luis Guzman, though the talents of Forrest Whitaker rather squandered in a very straight-laced role. One of the great Arnie vehicles this is absolutely not, but there's enough here for fans to enjoy in a sort of lazy Sunday afternoon sort of way, and it's probably most important because it's got promise of better to come if he gets properly back into acting.
Back into acting. Did he ever leave? Did he ever begin?
Yes, did he ever begin?
Scott.
The Last Stand sort of struggles desperately and probably more in spite of itself kind of manages to become just a little bit above mediocre, but it's far from anyone's best work. A lot of it is so unremarkable that it's probably not worth remarking on. Three things in particular stand out. Forrest Whitaker is either woefully miscast or woefully misdirected, because his agent's all over the place. It kind of doesn't matter so much in the end, because basically he's just there to provide exposition, but he seems to be supposed to be a kind of tough, slightly prideful FBI agent who's eventually shown up by this small town cop, but he's played like an absolute buffoon, and it's not a very comfortable character for him, and it doesn't look particularly convincing at all. The second is, as Drew rightly points out, the tone is all over the map, and that really does hamper it. The first half of it is all trying to be relatively serious despite the ridiculous car, but it's got people going, Oh no, I must mourn my deputy, oh no. And then by the end of it, it's got Johnny Knoxville exploding people and giggling about it and having arms fall like it's in some sort of stupid zombie comedy.
And where that bit particularly lost me was when Johnny Knoxville suddenly has his face pressed against a car window like a clown.
Hmm.
Very oddly tone? Oddly toned.
Oddly betoned, I think, is
that'll do.
The cromulent way of doing it. I guess the last one's a bit, it doesn't matter so much, and it's kind of written into the script a little bit, so forgive it, but I don't know, it just doesn't seem like Arnold Schwarzenegger belongs in this kind of film anymore. And it's strange to think, I mean, Sylvester Stallone kind of more or less went away from action cinema for about a decade or so, but when he came back and stuff like, well, Rocky Balboa to an extent, and then Rambo and The Expendables and so on and so forth, somehow he just feels like he's not actually went away, and he still feels like an action star. And Arnie kind of didn't in this. It feels like a memory of an action star rather than anyone that should actually be doing this sort of work. And it just felt a bit, I don't know, sad for a lot of it. It had an underpinning of melancholy. This is a man far past his best, and he probably just should have went quietly into the night, I think. Especially if, when you are coming back and you would think you had pretty much your entire choice of script, and a Korean director in Kim Ji-woon, who's done some tremendously remarkable stuff, if not particularly great stuff, but things like A Bittersweet Life and The Good, The Bad and The Weird were interesting works, and I saw The Devil was certainly powerful. I had a strong sense of style, if it wasn't actually something I would call a properly good film. But it was certainly distinctive, and to see something so roundly mediocre come out of this work and this script. And as I say, if you were Arnold Schwarzenegger coming back, you would have to think that you would have your pick of the action litter. And if this is actually just the best script that exists for action cinema, or, well, whenever this was started pre-production a couple of years back, then we're all in very bad shape.
I can't imagine he did have his pick of scripts, though, coming back. I think probably he was given the bottom of the barrel.
I'd be inclined more to feel that way, that he wouldn't have had the huge amount of choice.
Yeah, Hollywood, laying aside the fact that he's knocking on a bit, that style of action film that he made his signature has long since passed into history, kind of thing. I also think Hollywood's one of those towns where it's like, yeah, you go and do your own thing, but hey, you're not playing by our rules, so don't expect to walk back in and have an easy time of it.
Obviously, I enjoyed this more than Scott, but it's really not a great film. I just found it sort of inoffensive fun. It does make you sad if you think back to greats like Commando and Predator, though. I mean, it's a world away from them, and Scott's right in that I think so Stallone's done a more successful job of maintaining his career with that sort of role, although really they should both just give up and hand the baton over to Statham, who's the only real obvious successor to their 80s and 90s successes. I don't know, it's left me at least mildly hopeful that he's still got a good couple of films in him. Just something with a bit of a better script would be nice.
Well, you know what I'd like to see Arnie do? A family Christmas comedy. Oh, no, wait.
Nobody wants to see that, Craig. Nobody.
Nobody wants to see that again. Which banter just about wraps it up. Remember that you can find us individually on Twitter, but you can contact the one-liner account at the one-liner, or you can drop us an email at podcast@theoneliner.com. And also any feedback you want to leave on the iTunes store would be massively appreciated. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more pointed observation. But until then, I was Craig, Scott was Scott.
Bye.
And Drew was a Drew.
Goodbye.
Cheerio. Downgrade your 50 caliber keyboard to a 2-2, man.